there's a lot of talk about how governments need to be open to social media tools. At the same time, though, in government environment, it is good to have boundaries, because boundaries give the employees rules and some kind of an idea of how far they can go. They can also give them freedom to explore and experiment with social media. And we found that, in general, a lot of government agencies are afraid to just jump into using social media tools without putting some boundaries around it. You know, policies do change after a while, you know, as governments get more comfortable with using social media. But in general, it seems that they like to have some kind of boundaries about the usage of those tools.
And yet, the other side of that is this is evolving almost so quickly. A lot of people are almost hesitant to put something down on paper because, hold on, do we know enough yet to be able to put those boundaries in place yet? Are we blocking off stuff that we might actually, you know, are there opportunities that we're missing if our policy becomes too hard?
Absolutely. And, you know, I think if you look at the report itself, we don't necessarily advocate that you should be blocking any type of tool. What we do say is that you should review your policy to make sure that it's aligned with the strategy your agency is pursuing in terms of social media. And the strategy presumably will change as social media tools evolve. Also, you know, while the tools evolve so quickly, if you look at the essential elements of the policy, you know, some of those elements are not necessarily going to change. You know, it is very unlikely that governments will ever encourage their employees to be rude to citizens.
Right.
So just putting some, you know, very basic understandings out there in terms of what employees should and shouldn't do, how should they engage public, and also give the citizens some understanding of what is acceptable in terms of a comment on a government social media site and what isn't. So they don't feel as they're being censored, but they're, you know, the rules in terms of, for instance, negative conduct, or not even negative conduct, but more, you know, swear words or racially offensive comments will simply not be posted because it goes against the policy of the government agency.
And you've read many more policies than I have. I've looked at the ones at the EPA and Navy. And one of the things that both those agencies have said is, yes, this is new, but we also have experience here. As you say, we're not going to be rude to citizens, for goodness sakes. We're not going to be rude to most people. We've been here. We've done this. We have some policies already that exist that can help move forward.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, part of the report is also just simple guidance on how to go about creating your policy. And the very first thing to say, or that we say, besides, you know, having the right team together, is review the existing policies, because a lot of these issues are already addressed in existing things, such as employee handbooks, acceptable use of internet resources. So don't just go and start creating your policies from scratch. Look at what you have, see what you are missing, and then decide whether, you know, a separate social media policy is appropriate for your agency, or whether you can address all these issues with an existing framework.
And the great thing about your report, which we'll have linked up on DoraBeckInsider.com, is you actually have sample language in there for people to copy, use. It's not plagiarizing if it's given away for free, right?
No, I mean, the government agencies that we use, their policies, they post them online themselves.
Right.
And I think that was one of the most important things, is to give, you know, specific practical examples of what people are actually doing and writing in terms of the language. Because, you know, it's very easy to tell them, you know, you have to control access. But unless you give them an example of what other agencies are doing, it's very hard to, you know, to get a grasp of what that actually means.
And it seems like having a policy also, because there are a lot of agencies that say, oh, my goodness, this Gov 2.0 stuff, it's just too scary. There are too many risks out there for us to jump into this pool. We'll wait and let the other folks make mistakes. But there are some ways of containing those risks.
Absolutely. You know, I think that's the beautiful thing about, you know, a policy. It helps you mitigate some of these risks.
Yeah.
You know, it helps you think about some of these issues ahead of time, so you're not completely surprised if something happens. You know, if you do not put a disclaimer on the site that your employees are not going to be available 24/7,
right,
and then your citizens do expect them to be 24/7 available, then you just created a problem that could have been avoided to begin with. So, you know, helping government professionals to think through some of these issues and help them mitigate some of the potential risks is, you know, the point of the report as well.
And yet it does seem that you have to be fairly agile in this, because this world is changing fairly quickly.
It is. I mean, you know, one of the things that we talk about a little bit is the legal and the security implications of it.
And that's just what I wanted to talk to you about, too.
Right. Yeah. You know, those components were very, very difficult to write, simply because, like you said, the world of social media evolved so quickly. However, from what we could tell when we talked to, you know, government IT security professionals, they were saying, you know, a lot of these things are not necessarily new. It's just a new vehicle through which people are trying to attack our systems. We went through a lot of these, you know, same things with email, you know, 10 years earlier,
yeah,
with people attaching documents and then people simply opening them because they assume that it's okay to open them. You know, the added threat with social media is the inherent level of trust. If you receive an email from Facebook from your mother and it says open it, you're probably going to open it, but it might not necessarily be sent from your mother. So a lot of the security precautions are about training your employees to look out for, you know, suspicious emails, you know, something that you would not expect your mother to send you necessarily. And that's a big part of, you know, the security precautions.
And part of this is common sense, it seems, and you have to actually think before you just go off and do these things.
Right, you know, but I'll be the first one to admit that sometimes I really don't think. I just kind of, you know, get an email and I'm thinking
just
about
click away.
Things. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I'm very grateful that I have no privileges in terms of our infrastructure network, so I can't really do any harm. But, you know, I think it has to be dual protection. I think there has to be training and behavioral adjustments, and there also has to be security adjustments.
The portion in your report, you highlight in the security section, you highlight a portion of the policy from the state of California. And what do they do particularly well on security? Because this just seems like such a big issue in this Gov 2.0 world.
You know what, to be honest, we did not attempt to say what does one agency does well in terms of security. So I can't really speak to that much. And my background isn't necessarily technical. I think that some of the things that people were talking about was, you know, having simply your virus protection up to date, having your passwords protected, and all that. You know, the North Carolina policy goes a little deeper into some of these issues.
But part of what these policies do is decide, you know, this is part of the question, okay, do we allow people to go on? What sites can people go on? What sites can't people go on? And how do you deal with those issues?
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think, you know, from what we can tell, that's really up to each of the individual agency and their content and context. You know, we had an agency that didn't allow any access except to YouTube, and then it was only ability to view YouTube videos because they felt that their employees could really benefit from some of the materials that are on YouTube. Majority of the agencies did not allow open access to their employees. And, you know, there are pros and cons to both strategies. You know, the pro of opening access is that you're giving your employees a chance to share knowledge, collaborate, and broaden their horizons. At the same time, by opening access, you are opening yourselves to more vehicles of security attacks, for instance, or simply for employees saying things that they shouldn't say. So I think each agency has to weigh these pros and cons and then decide what is right for them.
One of the other issues that you touch on are the legal issues, and these do get very, very complex. And you highlight the city of Hampton, Virginia's policy, which goes through and says specifically that just because this is a different framework, FOIA still applies, e-discovery laws still apply, archiving issues. This isn't a way to get around those laws. This is a way to enable you to get a job done, perhaps more effectively, but not to bypass the existing laws out there.
Absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, from all the interviews that we have done and from all the policies that we have done, people do not assume that by using Facebook you somehow get around having to keep records of your engagement. In fact, you know, the FOIA laws differ obviously from each state, and the definition of records differ slightly. Some states have a very broad definition of what record is. Some states have a slightly more curtailed version. But I think there is a general agreement that whatever goes onto social media tools is a government record. You know, the very difficult part is determining what kind of record retention schedule that specific record falls under. And that seems to be a bigger problem for agencies, is to figure out how long do we have to retain these records, and also what kind of tools can we use to efficiently and effectively maintain these records that we have to.
The big takeaway that folks should take away from the report is what?
Well, I think there are several takeaways, but you know, we are writing a follow-up report that's actually going to be the final report of the project. And you know, one of the things that I would like to say is, you know, there is a huge potential value in using social media in government. You know, I think that everybody agrees with that. To what extent that potential has been realized is questionable. But I do believe that there is definitely value and government should get engaged. However, they also need to manage their engagement because it is, you know, it should not be a wild open west where anybody can do anything. You know, it should be managed in a certain way. And it doesn't mean to be completely restrictive. It just means you should think about some of these issues ahead of time. And change them periodically as your strategy evolves.
And my takeaway was that policies can be an enabler to help you do this in a more effective way, a more safe way almost.
Absolutely.
Rather than, I think so often people look at a policy as saying, this is going to prevent us from doing something. In effect, this can have the opposite effect. This can actually enable you to do this more effectively.
Absolutely. I mean, we did have one agency that said, you know, we are not on any kind of social media tool because we are waiting for a policy.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that's the key to it. You know, policy in some ways gives you freedom to do it, and I think that's why it's very important to have one.